This is Pure Decking, show number 485 for Thursday, June the 30th, 1934. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and staring in abject horror at the blank blinking cursor, realizing I have forgotten to write something poignant to put here in the intro. Tonight, we have a madman. What's up, madman?
Hola. I've got a head cold. The universe hates me this week.
Only this week?
Only this week, because last week, my death threats and pleas finally reached the right people at Jones Soda, and they brought back Cherry Jones as a limited run.
Nice.
Now you have to give them the total back.
That kind of got sold for soup money.
Well, it is tough times in Putin's price pinch.
And we have an
argument. Getting the talking points correctly.
Is that what it's supposed to be now? I've lost track.
I don't know anymore, but you see the old retard yesterday shit-talking America on stage to the world? You don't do that, man. You don't shit-talk your own internal issues to the world. That's just a real bad look.
You know what the sad part is? He doesn't think it is.
No, I know.
It's like, yeah, I mean, no, I didn't see it, but it doesn't surprise me. He's let's just go to the UN and dare all the dirty laundry. Where was he the other day where he thanked the president of the country for coming to see him? What was it?
Yeah. I mean, you don't sit there and air your dirty laundry, you know. I don't come on the station and start immediately shit-talking my wife, you know what I mean? That's exactly what it looked like.
Well... So I don't fucking know. I mean, everyone knows he's a potato and not really in charge. So at this point, we're just kind of waiting it out. So anyways, may or may not be taking the next couple of weeks off on the show. I haven't made up my mind on that one yet. Probably not. We'll see. I don't know. The idea was floating around that I might take some time off, but especially after the news stories this week, my God, it took forever to find anything worth talking about. I don't know about you guys. Psychro sent me some stuff, but I mean, you know, still, it's pretty slim. So, unless you wanted to find stories about abortion, you know, plenty of that shit. It's like, I don't care
about it.
I don't care. It's like, oh, no, apps will track you if you're going near an abortion clinic. It's like, oh, for God's sake. Really? I mean, apps track you anyways. You're really going to fear monger over that? Yeah, I guess they will. So, anyways. But yeah, if we don't see an improvement in the news cycle here soon, I'm thinking we might take some time in the summer off just because there's nothing to talk about. That, or I'll just have to come up with a discussion topic that takes up the whole show, or you guys can do your IHN after show or whatever the hell it was that we were talking about a couple of weeks back.
Yeah, Madman had a name for it. I don't know, man. Yeah, if tech's getting a little on the ordinary side. I mean, there's no new developments, nothing. I mean, AI story was sort of interesting.
Yeah, I've got the UK AI story.
There was a few things like some chipset companies coming to America, but they want like $90 billion or something to come.
Yeah, well they're printing money to give to Ukraine. Why not? Print some more.
Well, they said no. I'm like, no, that's like future-proofing your country. Yeah, pay to have a chipset maker come in. But make them sign a contract or something. You know, you'll do 50 years.
You have to realize, we've got globalists in charge right now, and they don't like the idea of, you know, manufacturing here in the country. They like us being dependent on other parts of the world. They think it's a good thing.
That 90 billion, That's not cash. They were
wanting
tax
credits. Yeah.
I mean, it's not effectively us paying them $90 billion. It's we're not going to tax you this amount of money initially because we know it's going to take you how many ever decades to turn a profit. Because whenever you're building something like a high-end microchip factory,
oh, they take years.
That is expensive as shit.
Yeah, well, it's a huge investment for the nation state, and takes decades to build and minutes to sign a document to tear it down. You know.
Well, and the worst thing about it is, okay, you're going to build a chip fab, right? So you decide to build that chip fab with the absolute latest and greatest that's available when you sign all the paperwork. By the time it's up and running and producing, it's 5 years out of date.
And they're not going to be turning a profit for so many years after it starts producing.
Oh, yeah.
So no, they're initially going in the hole.
They're going in the hole
just asking,
a lot.
Don't tax us until we're not in the hole. And the government's saying, well, that's going to cost us $90 billion, which it's not going to cost them $90 billion because they didn't have that $90 billion to begin with.
Well, one, Madman, you obviously need some whiskey, so I recommend going and acquiring that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's like they're looking at it like, oh no, that's money we wouldn't get if we give you a tax. No, that's not how it works. You're just letting them keep. What do you think taxes are? But I don't really want to get into politics. I like bitching about it, but I don't want to get into details of it because it's painful and stupid.
It's frustrating because you know the right thing to do is not what's being done.
The right thing to do is never what's actually done. We all know that.
Yeah.
So why don't we get into this one, which is just fun. It's from Torrent Freak. Harvard lawyers don't think that piracy is theft, research finds. Why is there
steal?
A comma, research finds? Just talk to the fucking lawyers. You don't need scientists in a room doing research on what the lawyers think.
Hey, what did they steal? When did they get caught? And why are they suddenly saying this?
Most people know all too well that downloading and sharing pirated movies and TV shows is against the law. Nonetheless, millions do so on a daily basis. These pirates are not all borderline criminals. They can be doctors, veterans, police officers, and lawyers. In fact, many top lawyers don't think that piracy is unethical, and some even support it. This is also what Professor Darius Jimalalik and Dr. Magozata...
Bing chong bing bong.
No, it's Siskisalka? It's very, reported in a recent paper. That guy. They're now that guy's. To conduct this in-depth quantitative study, one of the researchers spent a year at Harvard informally engaging with the International Masters of Law cohorts. This program is highly competitive. It requires a law degree, top grades, and work experience as a lawyer. The embedded researcher participated in the student's social life on a daily basis, both offline and in an active online Facebook group. In this setting, informal but structured interviews were carried out. The goal of the research was to find out how these legal experts viewed current copyright regulations and the acceptability of digital piracy. In addition, they were asked about their thoughts on the future of copyright. So what these guys did, I know I was joking about just talk to them, but that's what they did. They just did it in a way that they didn't quite explain that they were doing research on whether piracy is okay or not, because obviously every lawyer is going to have a very different answer to that if they think they're talking to something that's going into a research paper rather than, you know, just talking to somebody online that they know, you know?
Yeah, they're going to give you the legal answer, not the my opinion answer.
Mm-hmm. Or the, I don't know, I would need to see a case. The goal of the research... Oh, I already read that. This type of research approach is not easy to summarize in a graph or table. However, it allows the researchers to ask more detailed follow-up questions to expose finer nuances and beliefs. The results were published in the Journal of the Association for Information Science and Technology and offers a unique insight into the liberal copyright and piracy views of these lawyers. The majority of the respondents refuted the notion that piracy is theft, as now President Joe Biden once said. On the contrary, many lawyers are quite tolerant when it comes to file sharing. Quote, Our study reveals that law professionals with raised professional ethics standards and expectations towards law-abiding behavior, what lawyers have you been seeing on TV, guy? highly above average understanding of the law and higher than average socioeconomic status do not equate digital piracy with physical theft and are generally very tolerant or even supportive of it, unquote. Yeah, I forgot to unquote in the middle of with my comments there, so, you know. Go read the article. These findings apply to consumers who download or watch pirated content, not the people who operate piracy sites. But it's intriguing nonetheless, especially when examining some of the detailed responses. Throughout the paper, the researchers draw several conclusions supported by quotes from the interviews, emphasized in bolded italics below. Quote, there is the shared sense that digital goods differ from physical goods, and that this constitutes a basis for new socio-normal or societal norms to emerge, while they, quote, would never do anything illegal elsewhere, unquote, digital piracy or pirating digital content is treating morally differently and morally acceptable. Although it might be illegal, there is a widespread perception that it's not theft, and some may have no issue discussing it in a professional setting. Quote, I have spoken with my clients about the TV shows that I have downloaded and watched, unquote. Of the 50 lawyers who were interviewed, only 3 believe that downloading or streaming digital content from a pirate site is absolutely illegal and unacceptable, and even those 3 wouldn't report their friends' transgressions. Quote, if I were to call the police when somebody watched pirate movies, I wouldn't have any friends, unquote. The availability of legal content is an important factor for how these lawyers view piracy. When there's no option to consume content legally, many consider piracy to be fair game even for themselves. Quote, if for any reason there's a restriction, I think it's fair for me to download illegally or use a VPN to access content. I don't believe in geographical restrictions on the internet, unquote. The same reasoning applies to the cost element. If something is seen as overpriced, respondents generally view piracy as a more acceptable option. Quote, $200 for an academic... Huh?
I don't like that analogy. If it's too expensive, just steal it.
Yeah, the argument breaks down a little bit there, but they're talking.
It
about
does academics. in the physical world, yes, but in the digital world, a little different, man. I think there's some nuance.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I just heard that and had to say something.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Quote, $200 for an academic textbook is absolutely crazy. There is a choice that somebody sells it pirate, I would buy the pirate, unquote. Interestingly, these views are not equal across all content categories. Downloading pirated software, especially if it's used for commercial purposes, is seen as unacceptable by most lawyers. The same applies to books, with the exception of academic and educational content. Aside from the cost, respondents indicated that access to knowledge should be free and unrestrained. That argument weighs stronger than the law in this case. The full paper includes many more examples and context. The overall conclusion is that most of the Harvard lawyers don't see piracy as something that's by definition problematic. Well, of course they don't. They're not the copyright holders. The copyright holders
that's
are the
what
only
I'm thinking.
Ones
they're
who...
not. They're not putting anything out that could be pirated, so they're not getting hit by it.
Yeah. According to the researchers, this could be a strong indication that it might be time for a new paradigm. Tougher laws are not likely to be successful, so content creators and publishers should find ways to change their businesses. Instead of fragmenting into entertainment silos, it would make more sense to ensure that the public at large can easily access content for a decent price. Quote, one of the major practical implementations of our research is that it indicates a social, cultural, and mental change in the perception of piracy that has already happened. The researchers write, quote, the industries which are adapting to the needs and perception of society will win the race to establish new, effective, and yet widely acceptable and sustainable business models, they add. So, I don't know how much I agree with this 100%, because like we all just said, none of these guys are the ones who are losing money because of the piracy. Now, I truly believe every single copyright asshole greatly inflates how much they're losing to piracy. Because, the way some of this shit works... Well, okay, back in the day, used to download stuff on BitTorrent all the time, right? But if the choice wasn't to pirate it, but it was either pay for it or not see it, I think 90% of it would have been, okay, not see it. And that's the thing with piracy is yes, you are, it is abuse of the system. It is abuse. And you are potentially impacting the profits of whoever created the pirated content. But the numbers are greatly exaggerated. And, of course, the law is just abusive when it comes to this. And, you know, I used to do the piracy complaints for the school, and I never saw it as, you know, this, you know, it was... The people crying foul are crying foul, you know, crying foul so hard and so loud for what is probably not that big of a loss that it's like, I don't know. It's like speeding. You're wrong, but really, come on.
The only problem I have with our piracy laws right now are they were written at a time when we were targeting commercial pirates, people that were making fake DVDs, fake VHSs, and selling them and making a profit. And now a lot of people that are getting hit with these laws, they're not actually selling anything. They're watching a pirated DVD. So I don't think you should get hit with a $10,000 fine because you pirated the latest Doctor Strange movie by watching it on a streaming site. I think the ticket price to the movie would be an adequate fine. Or, you know, the cost of the DVD, not the here's your $10,000 fine for watching this one movie.
Yeah, I feel like this is a conversation I've had since day one on the internet.
It is. It's an old conversation.
I've got to have a foot in both camps. I've got to straddle a fence. I don't know what to do with it. Like, if you're pirating for a commercial gain, yeah, that can be a bit of a profit. But if you're pirating just for self-entertainment and you're not on selling it or anything like that, I think that's sort of okay, but it's still, in my mind, a little bit of theft.
It is theft. And there's so many free streaming sites. Yeah, you're stuck with ads, but you can watch billions and millions of hours of TV and movies for free on the internet, legitimately.
Yeah.
Go to Tubi, go to, I think, Vibi is another one. They're legitimate free streaming sites, and you're just stuck watching ads. But you can watch television shows, you can watch movies. If you want news, there's a lot of news channels that stream for free on their own websites. You're just stuck with ads. So there isn't a big argument on, I can't watch stuff if I'm wanting to watch stuff for free. It's, I don't want to do what it takes to legitimately watch things.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but here lately, everything has been splintered off into its own subscription service, right? It's like, oh, you want to watch this show, you got to sign up to HBO. You want to watch this show, you got to sign up to Paramount. You want to watch this show, you got to sign up to Disney. And it's like, you know, I don't want 50 fucking subscriptions to watch TV shows. And that's not so much about the cost, because it's, you know, okay, what are these things, $10 a month? And what were you paying before for, you know, if you're doing cable TV, which, you know, I'm not. But, you know, it's not that expensive, really, for most people for these streaming services. But it gets so fucking stupid when you've got to get into the sixth fucking streaming service to catch a show you want to watch. So it's not even about the money. It's about the convenience. It's about the fact that, you know, when Netflix had everything on it, you know what? Yeah, just pay the Netflix, you know, subscription and do it through Netflix. But now they've pulled so much crap off of Netflix and everything's off on its own. And it's such a pain in the... I just recently canceled HBO because I watched what I wanted to watch on it and there wasn't going to be anything new on it for a bit. And I'm just like, I don't see the point in paying for it, right? But trying to cancel that, oh, the website is dirty. It's like, oh, yeah. Well, why are you canceling? And then, you know, the button at the bottom says, you know, submit and keep my subscription. And then in the same color as the background, smaller and kind of hidden, is the no, continue to cancel. You know, and it's below the survey of why are you canceling this. So, you know, it's just intentionally confusing trying to make sure that you say subscribe to these things whether you want to or not, right? And, yeah. Oh, Rats has a Rats threw a wall of text at me. What do you say here? Let's see. Yeah, all the subs together is the cable price. Something like Bandcamp for movies. Sure, yeah. Can't buy a DVD. Well, I mean, you used to be able to buy a lot of the shows like on an Amazon or there's something like that, even if they were on a different stream. You can't even do that anymore. You know, good example, I bought season one of Lower Decks because I thought it was hilarious on Amazon and I wanted to watch season two. You can't buy season two. It's been out forever, but no, they won't sell it to you. You have to, you know, they want you to subscribe to Paramount. And it's like,
but
fuck
if you buy
that.
It, you can rewatch it whenever you want.
Yeah.
That's why. Hey, it's life as a service, man.
That's what
we've
they
been
want.
Saying it for years. Life as a service.
So again, the problem with piracy isn't so much the cost these days, at least for me, although granted, maybe not everybody's economic situation is the same. I get that. But I'm going anecdotally with my own example. It's not so much the cost. It's just a pain in the dick to have to do how many fucking subscriptions, different apps on your shit. And I just like, you know, fuck it. I don't want to deal with it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's and this article about these lawyers not respecting piracy shouldn't be a surprise because nobody fucking does unless you're a copyright holder.
Yeah.
Because they're the only ones getting burned. And again, but the problem with them is they squeal so loud about it when you know the numbers aren't what they claim. It's like Madman said, the numbers were written, you know, the laws were written for a different time, for a different model.
Well, the penalties are my issue. I'm not sure how off their numbers are. They say, we went to this one server and 30 million people were downloading, I don't know, Lower Decks.
How many of those people?
They're really wrong?
Well, no. Well, okay, fair enough. But how many of those people, if they didn't have the option for piracy, if the choice was pay the money for it, you know, pay the $15 a month for the subscription, or just don't see it, how many of those people would have paid the $15 versus going for the other option because it's more convenient? Nine times out of ten, the piracy sites are more convenient.
Apparently, 30 million of them were willing to go with that rather than, in my example, pay the fee. Even though signing up to a site's not that difficult.
But my point is, if the piracy choice wasn't there, if it was pay for it or nothing, how many people would choose nothing?
Yeah, I'd probably go with the nothing. Find other means of entertainment.
I'm going to go 30 million of them would choose to steal because they had the choice not to. You're saying the reason they're willing to steal is, one, the odds of any one person getting caught is next to nothing. Like, how many people would steal a Tesla if only one in a million or a billion people get caught and prosecuted for stealing a Tesla?
Well, the state of California is an example for that with shoplifting right now. So.
Yeah, so how many people do you know that pirate, and how many people do you know that have actually gotten caught, prosecuted, and paid a fine for it?
Well, I'm not a good example for that because I used to deal with the copyright complaints for a university.
Yeah, and how many of those people actually paid a fine for it?
None, because we shielded them.
Yeah, people are willing to do it because they know the odds are they're not going to get caught and they're profiting from it. So I don't think it's quite a legitimate statement of how many people out of that 30 million would pay the $15 because all of them had the option and none of them did. So I'm going to go all 30 million of them would have chosen to steal because all 30 million of them did.
But Madman, if the option to steal wasn't there, how many of them wanted to see it badly enough that they would have paid the money? The point is it's an opportunity cost or it's an unrealized profit. It was never real. That's my point. Is I'm not arguing Okay, yes, 30 million people chose to steal in your example. Fine. I'm not arguing that. What I'm saying is when the person says, well, look how much lost sales that is, you're assuming every single person who was pirating it would have legitimately purchased a copy if piracy was not an option. And I don't think that's the case. I think it's a fraction of the people who pirate would have legitimately purchased a copy if piracy was not an option.
Well, would you look at it this way more? Say the streaming service was, say, $1 a month, and then you could watch whatever show you want, and then it had a tip at the end of each show. You had a choice whether to pay like $1, $5, but what you thought this show was worth. You think that's a better model?
Well, it's value for value. I mean, it's not a bad model, but there's a lot of people. But the problem with a model like that is that you run into the tragedy of the commons, and that you'd have a lot of people who's like, well, other people are tipping, I don't need to. However, there is a good example of that working, and that's all those live streamers.
Yeah, with their super chats. That's what I was thinking with that. You only make money as you entertain. The more entertaining you are, the more money you fucking make. And let's face it,
unless
you're looking for
a
whale.
Set of tits. In that case, it's just...
You're doing a Diablo 4, you need one whale, that's it, you know, to pay $500,000 to get the ultimate character. You know, for example, say I put on Doctor Strange. I turned Doctor Strange off after 15 minutes. Couldn't stand it. It was just poorly written. I wouldn't pay shit for that movie. But then again, there's been other movies. They like Greyhound.
Is
that Danny DeVito? No, that's Dr. Troy.
The thing with the Doctor Strange example of where you turned it off after a few minutes because it was just, you know, you didn't like it. Fine. The movie studios don't care if you watch the thing as long as you pay for it. So that right there is actually a really good example. So
yeah, it's like, I want to be entertained. Like, and the movie industry is almost the only industry out there that, well, you can't see the product till you've paid for it, and then you can't get your money back if you didn't like it. You know what I mean?
Oh, Hazard says, hey, oh, I guess I got the tall end of this after forever. Dude, we started a little late. What are we at? 20 minutes? Yeah, 27 minutes. Okay, we've been going longer. I didn't realize that. So, it is an old argument, but I don't... I think Madman's right. I think the theft, it is theft, but the laws are way out of whack when it comes to punishment.
Oh, and as far as fractional reserve banking, I do believe whoever came up with that should be drug out in the street, doused with gasoline, set on fire, and then hung by the neck until dead.
I'm with you, Madman.
That was a response to rats.
Get this posse going.
Rats wants to know what our thoughts of like a band can't pay what you want plus the average of upper. Yeah, no, I think that'd be a great way to do it. You know, like RU was saying with the whole tip at the end to what you thought it was worth. Because on one hand, yeah, you'd have a lot of people who would pay the minimum and that's it. But on the other hand, you'd have a lot of people who loved it, want to see more, and they'd pay you way more than you would have
asked. Exactly. And let's face it, if they just give $1 at the end because they were, man, the show was okay, it's $1 more than you had before the piracy issue.
Well, I'll tell you this. I used to listen to the No Agenda podcast. Now, I quit listening to them a long time ago because they kind of went a little out there for me, and I wasn't driving nearly as much, so I just, you know, kind of fell out of it. But their donation model of just, you know, donate what you think it's worth was really working for them because they were getting some people. I mean, they had a collection of whales, several thousand people who were giving them a small amount of money a month, and they were doing quite well with it. So, you know, they'd occasionally have some people, you know, who came in and gave them $1,000. And it's just like, you know, it's like your live streaming example again of like, you know, you're going to have a lot, you know, you're going to have several thousand people watching you. And of those, you'll have 10% actually donating. But if the 10% donating are donating a lot, well, you know.
So you only need one whale. somebody who's really into your shit, man, they will pay you.
Yeah, we have a drive-in about like
IMAX,
that.
IMAX tickets plus popcorn is like $60 for two people. $60 is on the low end. There's a couple of theaters before COVID. I haven't been to them in a while. But there's one not far from me that does the whole, you know, it's you know, the reclining seats and you know, dinner and shit like that. And, of course, it's all overpriced. But, you know, I've gone in there by myself to see a movie and have dinner after work one time because traffic was just fucking terrible. And I'm like, well, I'll go see a movie instead. And, you know, dude, I think it was $60 just for me and just to have some dinner and watch one of the Marvel flicks. What was it? Second Spider-Man movie, I think. Just because traffic coming back from the office was terrible. I'm like, hey, I'll go to the movie theater and wait the traffic out.
Last couple times I've gone to the movie theater, I've gone to the drive-in up here. See three movies for $8 and get a large popcorn and a Coke for $6.
Well, hell, if you're going to a drive-in, bring your own food.
Yeah, I didn't want to stop, but I've done that as well. So. Time for some more scotch.
Let's get into the rest of these stories. First one up, it's kind of a follow-up from what we talked about earlier about India. Any VPN servers in India must now store activity logs on users. This is from techradar.com. Did anybody else have anything on the piracy thing before I...
No, I'm good. Okay.
No, I think we discussed everything.
Yeah, I didn't want to cut anybody off if you had a dying, you know, point you wanted to die on there. As of June 28th, oh, it's got an update. Okay, as of June 28th, Indian authorities have extended the deadline for VPNs to leave or amend logging practices to September the 25th. Information wants to be free. Hack the planet. Now, there's a movie I need to rewatch. I haven't watched that one in a bit. All VPN services running servers in India must now comply with a new data law that has officially come into force. According to the new CERT-IN regulations, security software companies are legally obligated to store users' data, like IP addresses, real names, and usage patterns for up to 5 years. They will also be required to hand this information over to authorities upon request. Since the government announced this, announcement was released on April 25th. Internet users, privacy advocates, and cybersecurity experts have been expressing concerns. Concerns. Yeah, more like abject panic. On how these regulations will have a negative impact on people's privacy. All this has led to some of the best VPN services taking drastic measures in order to not compromise privacy values and to continue safeguarding the anonymity of their users. Yeah, what's the for safeguarding users' anonymities, most private VPN services are around all poor English enforce strict no-log policies. This means no user data can be stored, leaked, or shared. This was exactly the reason why an obligation to retain customers' logs as is, as ExpressVPN described, incompatible with the purpose of VPNs. What's more, India's new data retention law doesn't only affect VPNs. Cloud storage services, virtual private servers, data centers, and cryptocurrency exchanges are all targets of the new CERT-IN regulations. The move comes in an effort to clamp down on ever-growing incidents of cybercrime. With more than 86 million data breaches in 2021, India was the third most affected nation last year.
How much would the cost of complying with this be? Because if you're needing to store that, think of how many sites you go to each day.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, storage is cheap if you're talking spinning Rust, but still, man, you massive databases. Massive databases. And, of course, the companies are the ones that have to pay for it, not the government. They don't care to pass the law. But, yeah, many VPN providers have taken a stand against Indian government's decision, expressing their commitment to their company's values. Some of those have decided to go virtual, protect the privacy of their users. They set up virtual locations so that people in India can connect to a spoofed Indian IP. These offer the same functionality, but users' data will be safe as their connection will be rerouted to servers physically located outside the country's borders. Providers that are now offering virtual India locations include ExpressVPN, Surfshark, CyberGhost, Private Internet Access, and PureVPN. Some, like IPVanish, are thinking of offering something similar in the future. However, at the time of writing, Indian virtual locations haven't been announced yet. So, others, despite shutting down their Indian servers, claim not to have any plans to introduce fake locations. That's Nord, Hide.me, and Atlas. As Laura Tiley from Nord told us, quote, "We believe that we are going to find a way to meet the requirements of our customers regardless of their location." ProtonVPN also expressed its dissent over the new CertIN regulations, suggesting secure ways of connecting to VPN servers in high-risk countries. These include the use of one of its... anyways, so on and on and on. But I have a question. What does India plan on doing about Tor? Are they going to go after anybody running a fucking Tor node saying, where's your user logs? It's like, it's Tor, dude. What logs?
Yeah.
They might. Actually, I'm just wondering how many servers are going to be set up in Pakistan just right over the border.
A lot. Well, that's what most of them are going to do, right? They're just going to, okay, well, fine. We don't operate in India. I mean, Indian customers connect to us in our, you know, Pakistani IP or our European IP or whatever, but let's see.
Oh,
I don't know.
India might have to go with another copy of the Great Chinese Firewall and just start blacklisting known VPNs.
Well, I think that's what Netflix wants to do because they're again, you know, going nuts on the whole multi-login thing. So, I like what they're saying in the IRC. Al Hazard says they can say what they want, but they're famously incompetent. Basically, saying that the Indian government can try to make these rules and has no idea how to enforce them. There's probably a lot of truth in that.
They have a public announcement saying "poo in the loo."
Well,
and it's still not winning through, dude. India got a lot more problems than IP collection shit like that. I don't think it's going to be a priority of their.
What did our former president call these kind of countries?
Very fine nations.
Right, that. There it is.
Yep, there we go.
Next article is from the independent.co.uk. UK rules that AI cannot patent inventions. Who thought it would? I mean, seriously, if you looked at what all this AI stuff is, it's not going to be the AI itself that patents the invention. It's going to be the company that owns the AI patenting the invention. I mean, duh.
Come on. I think they're implementing this law just in case AI does go rogue and becomes sentient and demands payment.
Our current models are not going to be sentient anytime soon. I promise you.
You know, I'm just trying to figure out why they made this fucking law.
Well, that's probably right in that they don't understand. They're like, oh no, what if it's Terminator? Well, we better not give him any rights. Oh, and Madman posts the poo in the loose in the IRC.
This got public funding.
Yes, it did. Is
My
that the
country
animated
helped
song?
Pay for this.
Take your poo to the loo. Mm-hmm. The UK government has announced that artificial intelligence algorithms that come up with new technologies will not be able to patent their inventions. The Intellectual Property Office said on Tuesday that it also plans to tweak existing laws to make it easier for people and institutions to use AI. Machine learning and data mining software in order to rapidly advance research and innovation without requiring extensive permissions from copyright owners. It forms part of the UK's 10-year plan to transform the country into a global AI superpower through its national AI strategy announced last year. Good God, somebody help them. Anyways. The update aims to, quote, take advantage, unquote, of the UK's newfound ability to set its own copyright laws since leaving the European Union. Quote, now that the UK has the ability to set our own copyright laws for the first time in decades, we want to ensure that UK continues to have one of the best intellectual property frameworks in the world. unquote, said the Science and Innovation Minister, George Freeman. You know, I have to say something right here, and this comes up every time I read a story about the United Kingdom. I'm from Kentucky, so when I see UK, the first thing I think is not United Kingdom. And so in my head, some of this is just really bad. Madman knows what
Yo,
I'm talking
Wildcats.
About. Madman knows what I'm talking about. It's the UK's new ability since leaving the European Union. Wait, what?
University of Kentucky are doing wonderful things on the world stage these days.
Really? quote, our new UK rules on copyright and data mining will act as a catalyst for our innovators to flourish, helping ensure the UK's IP system remains a powerful enabler for groundbreaking research and development, unquote.
The story's more interesting now. I'm thinking of it that way. It's fantastic. And they must have cut their football program to pay for this.
Yeah, fucking right.
Of course. No one's cutting football programs for anything.
Not in that part. Not in Kentucky.
No. Nope. It'd be like asking Oklahoma to do the same for theirs. Cut the Sooners.
Oh, after the show, I'll tell you about the school I worked at, what they did to pay for their fucking football program after making a hilarious blunder. Basically, they paid a lot of money for a big-name coach who then absconded with it. And they had some award-winning programs that were not football-related that they cut to pay for the football. And like I said, the coach just took the money and ran.
Yep.
Anybody who can figure it out, it's about 10 years ago now. Good luck. The announcement was welcomed by David Prosser, Executive Director at Research Libraries UK, who said it would allow researchers to take advantage of powerful new AI and data mining techniques. Quote, the proposed changes to copyright announced today will allow us to harness the potential of new, innovative computational tools and significantly advance UK research and innovation, unquote, he said. Wait, really? You guys weren't inventing shit because you thought the AI would take credit for it? Fucking really? Yeah, the decision...
No, they weren't inventing shit because it's hard to invent shit.
The decision to not allow AI to patent inventions comes after a ruling at the Court of Appeals last year that said artificial intelligence system should not be recognized as an inventor because it's not. It can't. It's not sentient. It's not fucking data from Star Trek. It's a hell of a lot of if-then statements. Quote, only a person can have rights. A machine cannot, unquote. Lady Justice Lang wrote in her judgment, well, we know who the machines are going for first. Quote, a patent is a statutory right and can only be granted to a person, unquote. When the robot uprising comes, we'll just have to remind them, not all humans.
Now that they're pushing this, how many companies do you think are going to fight back? Because the easiest way to innovate in AI is to shorten copyright. Because the more people actually have access to your data, the better the likelihood of someone actually coming up with something useful.
I don't know, dude. I really don't. It's all so twisted and the way people's attitudes have gotten about this stuff lately, man. I don't fucking know. I'd love to see copyright back to its original duration. If copyright went back to its original duration, I think it would be a beautiful thing.
What was it, life of the author?
12 years.
Yeah. Hell, I can see that. You have 12 years to make your money off of it.
At least I think it was 12 years. Then it got extended to like 25. Then it was life of the author. Then it was the life of the author plus 10. Now it's the life of the author plus however long it's been since Walt Disney died so they can keep Mickey Mouse locked up.
Yeah. If they drop the quickest way to spur innovation is to have more people working on the problem. That means limiting copyright. I mean, it sucks for the copyright holders, but there's drawbacks to everything you do. Want more innovation, you're going to have to give up some property rights.
Well, as long as they don't ever allow software patents, That's the other thing, is most AI innovation is going to be software. If they're allowing software patents, then we've got real problems. So, but, I mean, they're upheld in a lot of cases. One of the reasons why so many people demand Adobe Photoshop to do photo work is because Photoshop has certain algorithms that are patented. So it's not that you can't figure out how to recreate the effects in Photoshop. It's that Adobe has them patented and will sue the shit out of any competitor who has a tool that works in the same way. So
hold up. That's a language. Shouldn't that be copyright? Am I misconstruing something?
It's an algorithm. So, I don't know, man. It's they basically got the concept. Yeah, Brad says it right. The concept of how it works is what got patented. So, anyways, next article is from Bleeping Computer. The Federal Bureau of Investigation warns of increasing complaints that cyber criminals are using Americans' stolen personally identifiable information and deep fakes to apply for remote work positions. Deep fakes, digital content like images, video, or audio, are sometimes generated using artificial intelligence or machine learning technologies that are difficult to distinguish from authentic materials. Such synthetic content has been previously used to spread fake news and could create revenge porn. But in the lack of ethical limitations regarding their use has always been a source of controversy and concern. The public service announcement published on the FBI's Internet Cybercrime Complaint Center today adds that the deepfakes used to apply for positions in online interviews include convincingly altered videos or images. The targeted remote jobs include positions in the tech field that would allow the malicious actors to gain access to the company and customer confidential information after being hired. Quote, the remote work or work from home positions identified in these reports include information technology and computer programming, database, software related job functions, the FBI said. Notably, some reported positions include access to customer PII, financial data, corporate IT databases, and or proprietary information. I mean, yeah, if you're wanting to hack a company, go steal somebody's information, deep fake your way through a Zoom meeting, and get yourself hired by the company so they just give you a fucking login. I mean,
it's a long way to go.
Might be easier than, like, well, I don't know. It's still pretty easy to trick people into giving up their Facebook creds and using those to figure out what their work logins are, but or just the old, you know, emailing the HR whatever spreadsheet, you know, HR planned layoffs at XLS. Watch your you know, CNC server fall over from everybody opening that one.
If I'm catching this correctly, my productivity could go way up without me doing anything.
While some of the deepfake reportings used are convincing enough, others can be easily detected due to various sync mismatches, mainly spoofing the applicants' voices. Quote, complaints report the use of voice spoofing or potential voice deepfakes during online interviews of the potential applicants, unquote, the U.S. Federal Law Enforcement Agency added. Quote, in these interviews, the actions and lip movements of the person seen interviewed on camera do not completely coordinate with the audio of the person speaking. At times, the actions such as coughing, sneezing, or other auditory actions are not aligned with what is presented visually, unquote. Some victims who reported to the FBI that their stolen PII was used to apply for a remote job also said pre-employment background checks information was utilized in other applicants' profiles. The FBI asked victims, including companies who have received deep fakes during the interview process, to report this activity via the IC3 platform and include information, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, they're using deep fakes to apply for jobs now. And partially that's because I've seen a lot of these videos lately where they take politicians and like badly deep fake their faces onto, you know, the videos. So I'm imagining that bobbleheaded kind of fuck up movement. You know, where it's like a stretched photo, not like an actual deep fake face, you know what I mean? Oh, that'd be fucking hilarious, right? You know, have one of those stretched photo videos of, like, I don't know, Obama or Trump show up in a Zoom call badly stretched, so it looks obviously fake.
Why are you going with the deep fake? Why not just go with the incompetent? I'm sorry, I can't figure out how to turn the filter off. You're just going to have to look at me as the image of a cat. I can tell you I'm not a cat, Your Honor.
Why
fake it when you could just look? I can't figure out how to get this to work. It's, you know, it's not my laptop, blah, blah, blah.
My friend's kids were playing with my phone and I haven't figured out how to turn off the Snapchat filter.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Something like that. Fuck going a whole deep fake route. But then again, I suppose if you want to appear a different ethnicity or something to help yourself get that foot in the door.
I swear, Your Honor, I'm not a cat is going to live in fucking infamy.
That is the greatest thing to ever happen from the great sneeze forward.
The funniest thing there is in my so are you one of the things you just casually mentioned is making sure you got the right appearance. I just suddenly flashed back on that Dave Chappelle skit of the black white supremacist. Right.
I mean, they're the only ones that are going to be in shock when you show up. There's the first day of work, Jamal. You
know? I had to divorce my wife.
She's a goddamn.
Next one up is from the Sydney Morning Herald. A mystery rocket crashed into the moon, and no one on Earth is owning up. Dun, dun, dun.
Looking at you, BSV.
Oh, that's a good... Somebody messaged BSV. Was this yours?
Is the moon base closer to being complete than we were led to believe, sir?
And is there a bear problem?
If not, we need to import space bears.
There we go.
So we're messaging BSV right now in real time to make sure it wasn't his. Okay. NSA, for fuck's sake. Well, we know where my head's at. NASA scientists are baffled by a mystery spacecraft that crashed into the moon, creating two large craters. The rocket has been tracked through space since 2015, but no one has claimed it. It was traveling at more than 5 kilometers a second when it hit the lunar surface on March the 4th this year. And new images by NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter show that the impact was unlike anything they had seen before. Quote, surprisingly, the crater is actually two craters, an eastern one, 18 miles in diameter, BSV says that's where I left that. an eastern one, 18 miles in diameter, superimposed on a western one, 16 miles in diameter, unquote. Scientists from NASA and the Arizona State University wrote in a post, quote, the double crater was unexpected, and that may indicate that the body had a large mass at each end. Typically, a spent rocket has mass concentrated at the motor end. The rest of the rocket stage mainly consists of an empty fuel tank. Since the origin of the rocket body remains uncertain, the double nature of the crater may indicate its identity, unquote. Amateur astronomers first pointed the finger at SpaceX, but then recalculated it was likely to be from a 2014 Chinese lunar mission, Chang 5T1. China has contested this, saying that the boosters had, quote, safely entered Earth's atmosphere and was completely incinerated, unquote. Bill Gray, an astronomer who created software that tracks objects in space, had to work backwards and compute a approximate orbit because although China announced and televises its launches, it does not reveal routes. Quote, I'm 99.9% certain that it's the China 5-T1, unquote, he told the BBC. He had previously thought it was a SpaceX booster. There are hundreds of pieces of debris on the surface of the moon, as well as the lunar landers and the astronauts' waste in Ziploc bags. Rocket boosters from the Apollo missions left a number of craters some 40 yards wide on the moon, while in 2019, Israel's crashed Bereshit spacecraft scattered debris on the lunar surface. At least 47 NASA rocket bodies have created, quote, spacecraft impacts, unquote, on the moon, according to the 2016 data from the Arizona State University. However, its scientists have said no other rocket body impacts on the moon created double craters. Japan, South Korea, Russia, India, and the United Arab Emirates aim to spend missions to the moon in the next year, where the U.S. plans to be to land the first woman there in 2024. I just love the fact that we have spacecraft impacts on the moon as a as official NASA parlance.
Dude, I'm just thinking with that, like, it's the only time they've ever seen a double crater. If Trump was still in office, America would be four fucking craters per impact, man. I tell you, wouldn't stick with this two shit.
They're saying that calling it the Chang 5-T1 was racist in the IRC. It's actually spelled that. Chang apostrophe E. How is it? I thought I said it right.
Hey, Morps, if it's racist, who cares?
Fair point. I mean, I know I mispronounce almost all of these foreign names, but, you know, come on. It actually is called Chang.
I mean, it's probably named after some sort of internment camp.
I mean, at least it wasn't like the Ching Chong Bing Bong rocket.
Oh, we too high instead of we too low. Oh. This one, we too high.
Or the CSS, the CSS slanty eye. I mean, come on.
Dude. I mean,
if we're going to go racist, let's go racist.
I mean, who cares if it's slammed into the fucking moon or not? It's not like we haven't slammed shit into the moon before. We've even slammed shit into Mars. Last couple of rovers didn't bounce too well, did they?
The lunar planter, boom, whoops. Yeah. Rang like a bell, that thing. Actually, I just wanted to read the article because it had the phrase spacecraft impacts in it. So.
Yeah. I mean, someday somebody will clean that shit up. I wonder what Neil Armstrong's turds are going to be worth when they finally retrieve them.
Oh,
I bet you there's a collectibles market.
I mean, they're going to be dry frozen, so they'll last a while.
Well, it'd be bleached as hell, too, because of the sun. God.
Well, you got to
depending on what type of bacteria is in there, there could be life on the moon now.
Yeah, good point.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
I don't
Neil
know.
Armstrong seeded a planet.
Hey, he was eating astronaut food on the way up there, so you never
India
know.
2.0.
Actually, when aliens finally discover our planet, you know, a couple of thousand years from now, we've wiped ourselves out in nuclear war. That might be the only evidence that we existed. Neil Armstrong shit on the moon.
Oh, I have a conspiracy theory for you after the show, Morps.
Oh, Lord. Oh, God, Al-Hazard, what did you say? Do you think 1,000 years from now, when they discover the moon or Mars is like an ecosystem, they'll do trials condemning violence? Oh, for fuck's sake. I don't know. People are stupid.
Oh, is it eco-violence against the moon? Is that what we're going for? You're talking about a thousand-year reign of the woke Reich?
Wait, what?
The woke Reich.
Reich. Okay. I thought you said the woke right. I'm like, wait a minute.
No.
That's like saying a libertarian socialist. It's like, wait, what? My brain. I'm just going to be under the desk rocking back and forth screaming. Don't mind me. Let's do the last. Huh?
Let's get the last one.
They call themselves that. Oh, Lord. IRC, you're not helping with my shreds of remaining sanity. Last article from tonight is from SciPost. Sexualized video games are not causing harm to male or female players, according to new research. In other news, video games don't make you go on shooting sprees, trying to kill all the demons with a shotgun.
Hold up. You mean I can't rape people in a video game because they're not people? They're video games?
That would be it, Madman.
Hold up. So what's happened to all these chicks in red dresses up in zip tying and leading off into corners and setting on fire?
Yeah, that's between you and the therapist, Madman. We've told you about that. We can't help you here.
Okay, but Madman, what video games were you playing? Not what were you doing in your off hours?
Oh. And then leading them off in the corner and setting them on fire, that's payday. You ever wondered why none of them make it to the van?
Simpsons meme, that's the joke. Okay. Yeah. Sexualization in video games does not appear to harm players, according to new research published in Computers in Human Behavior. I guess that's a magazine. The findings indicate that that playing video games does not lead to misogynistic views or detrimental mental health outcomes. Female characters are often attractive and scantily clad in video games, although this appears to be in decline in this trend line over time. Some people have raised concerns that sexualized portrayal of women has negative effects on players, but researchers on the topic has produced mixed results. To better understand whether playing video games is associated with decreased player well-being or increased misogyny, are those the same? Whatever. The authors of the current research used a statistical technique known as meta-analysis to systematically assess the results of previous research. Quote, I've been studying the effects of video games on players for 2 decades now, most of it on violence. I think most people have come to accept that there's no relationship between violent video games and aggression or violent crime, despite some holdouts, including the APA. Unquote, explained study author Christopher J. Ferguson, a professor of psychology at Stetson University. Quote, however, people still ask a lot of questions about sexualization and whether games either make male players more sexist towards women or whether women players experience more body dissatisfaction and other well-being concerns. It's a much smaller research field than the violence field, so we hope to bring some clarity to it. Unquote. Ferguson and his research team conducted a meta-analysis of 18 relevant studies. All of the studies included a measure of exposure to general or sexualized video games. 15 of the studies measure aggression towards women or sexist attitudes, while 10 studies measured outcomes related to depression, body image, or anxiety. But the researchers failed to find a statistically significant link between video games and either sexist attitudes or psychological well-being. Quote, overall, the moral panic over video games and sexualization is pretty much following the paint-by-numbers pattern of video game debate. A lot of hyperbole and moral outrage, but very little evidence that video games are actually causing any harm to either male or female players, unquote, Ferguson told SciPost. There's a lot more to the article. I don't think we need to read it. That pretty much sums it up. There's nothing here.
Yeah. Never was, never will be.
So I just enjoy pointing that out for all of the reasons that it's fun to point that out. Now, the real question, how long before this guy gets canceled?
Oh, yesterday, dude. He's gone. Done. His wife's going to leave him. His boy's going to transition. It's all over.
About 5 days ago. Alizard says 5 days ago. Anything
Factorio
on this?
Has made me more racist, though.
So tonight, what I have for you in Dojo is actually an Ars Technica article, but it's linking to the tool Rufus, and I don't need to read the whole article. Rufus is adding some options in their current beta release. If you're not aware of it, Rufus is a tool for burning ISOs to USB drives, as well as just formatting USB drives. So if you need to make a bootable USB to set up a Linux or a Windows disk or something like that, Rufus can take the ISO file and load it on there. However, Rufus has added some options to setting up Windows ISOs to make them bootable. So if you download a .iso file of Windows 11 from the Microsoft tool instead of making it directly into a USB bootable, and you use Rufus to make it into a bootable USB, there's a couple of checkboxes that show up if you go into the advanced options for the Windows bootloader. 4 checkboxes, to be precise, if you look at the beta version of 3.19. Customize Windows installation. Remove requirement for secure boot in TPM 2.0. Remove requirement for 4 gig of RAM and 64 gig plus disk. Don't know that I would remove that requirement because Windows 11 probably actually does need the 4 gigs of RAM and the 64 gig disk. My favorite, remove requirement for an online Microsoft account. And then finally, disable data collection, skip the privacy question or privacy questions. So Rufus is just putting some tools into its USB burner to just take the annoying parts out of the Windows 11 installer. Now,
Sounds like a good thing.
You still can't have that Windows 11 box hooked up to the internet while you're installing it, because if the installer detects an internet connection or you give it your Wi-Fi details, as I did during a Windows 10 install without thinking about it on a laptop a few years ago. I forgot to link the article, either the IRC or the thing, so my bad. Yeah, if Windows sees an internet connection it's during the installation, it's going to say you have to have a Microsoft account. But the newest versions of Windows 11, if it doesn't have an internet connection, it'll just say you can't finish setup. This turns that check off. Now, once it's installed, it's still Windows 11, so you still have to go turn off all the telemetry. You still have to do your customization. And it's still going to bark at you occasionally about finishing setup with a Microsoft account, and if you're on unsupported hardware, about how you might not get updates. But I think it's cool that they're adding this into Rufus, and I wanted to highlight it. So that's what I've got for you tonight. Of course, listen to the show. We're always listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. Madman, closing thoughts.
I think bourbon may be a better cold medicine than scotch. Scotch does work when you don't want to drive to get bourbon.
Good to know. Are you? Deep thoughts.
I have nothing, man. As usual, there is no deep thoughts happening here.
All right. Well, we're about 5 minutes over the hour, 6 minutes over the hour. We're not doing too bad. When I saw how long we had been talking about privacy, I'm like, oh, this might be a problem. But I think we're good. So I'm going to play the sound effects and stop yelling at the internet now.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Sounds good, nose down, and call tonight.
Shut up, Wesley.